Okay, this week is Parshat Vayigash. So we have Yosef revealing himself to the brothers. And then the news is heard throughout Paro's palace. And Paro then gives an instruction. Source number one. Vayomer Paro el Yosef. Paro says to Yosef, Emor elachecha zotasu. Tell your brothers, this is what you shall do. Ta'anu et bi'urchem ulchu bo'u'art sa'kna'an. Load up the animals, load them up with stuff, and you're going to go to the land of Kana'an. Ulchu et avichem. Take your father, et batechem, your homes. Uboi live et nelachem et tuv eretz mitzrayim v'ichlu et chelev ha'aretz. That you'll come, you'll take all your stuff, you'll move it here, and you will live off the fat of the land. Vata tzuveta zot, and this is what you shall do, he commands them. Chulachem eretz mitzrayim agalot, take wagons, agalot, take wagons. L'tapchem u'l'neshechem u'nasatem et avichem uva'atem. Take wagons, you load up the kids, you load up the women, you load up your father, and you put them all on the wagons, and that's how they'll travel. So presumably, the way to travel in those days either would have been you get on a camel, you get on a donkey, or you get on a wagon, and I would presume that wagons are far better. I guess that's whatever you would say is... That's first class, okay? I don't know how many points you need to collect to be able to go on the wagons and exactly how the service was, but I would presume that it would be far better to be traveling on a wagon than traveling what the Ramban tells us is a six-day journey by camel to go from Israel to Egypt. So I guess it's much better to be in the back of a wagon than to be on the top of a camel or a donkey. V'neichem al tachos al kalechem kituv kol eretz mitzrayim lechem hu. V'yasuchen b'nei Yisrael v'yiten lehem Yosef agalot al pi paro v'yiten lehem tzeda l'derech. L'derech. So, the children of Israel do as they're commanded. Yosef gives them agalot, but why does he give them agalot? Because that's what Paro said. I mean, this is all very, very clear. Whose idea is it, the agalot? Paro's idea. Why does Yosef do it? What does it say? Al pi Paro. Yosef does this because this is what Paro said. Why am I getting so excited about this? Because later on, it tells us, in the second source, Vayalu mimitzrayim, vayavo eretz Kanan, el Yaakov avihim. They leave Egypt and they go up to their father in Kanan. Vayigidu lo lemor, od Yosef chai, v'chi hu moshel b'chol eretz mitzrayim. They say Yosef is still alive and he rules over all of Egypt. Vayafog libo ki lo amin lahem. And he was not able to believe them. Vayidabru elav kol divrei Yosef. And they tell over all the things that Yosef said, Asher diber aleihem, all the things he said to them. Vayar et agalot, and then he sees the wagons, Asher shalach Yosef, laseit oto, the wagons, again, if we want to read into it, the first class wagons that were sent in order to allow him to travel. Vatichi ruach Yaakov avihim, and Yaakov's spirit returned. Layom Yisrael, Rav od Yosef ben Ichai, Ilchov, Erenu b'terem amut. Israel, Yaakov says, my son Yosef is still alive, I will go see him before I die. Rashi tells us, and now let's note, Rashi is commenting, et kol divrei Yosef, they tell over all the things that Yosef had said, right? So go back and look at the verse for a second. In Pasuk Kaf Zayin, Vaydebru elav et kol divrei Yosef, right? So you note, they say everything that Yosef said, but then it says at the end of the verse, Vayar et agalot, and then he sees the agalot, and then he believes. So what is it that causes him to believe? Is it something which they told him, or is it something which he sees? So again, if you want to go just what I would assume to be pshat over here, pshat would be, what is it that convinces Yaakov that this is true? When he takes note of the agalot, what's so significant about the agalot? This is an impressive way to travel. Whose agalot were sent? The agalot of Paro were sent. So you have Paro sending agalot. Whose idea is it to send the agalot? Whose idea? Who said Yosef?
Well, I said Yosef.
Whose idea is it to send the agalot?
Paro.
So, what? Asher, one second. I'll peep. Read it again. Before, in Pasukuf Aleph, before, Agalot Piparo. So, correct. What sounds to us to be pshat, again, going all the way through this, is Paro's idea to send the Agalot, Yosef sends the Agalot, Yaakov hears what Yosef's message was, but then he sees the Agalot, and it's seeing the Agalot that makes the difference. Then Rashi comes and tells us the following, in source number 3. And again, I want to note, on what words is Rashi commenting? On the words, et kol divrei Yosef, on what Yosef had said. Siman masard lahem, bimahaya osek kishapiresh mimenu, that he gave him a sign. Yosef gives a sign that presumably only he would know, only he and Yaakov would know. What's the sign? That the last thing that they were learning together before they left, Biparshat Egla Arufa. The last thing that they learned together was the portion of the Egla Arufa. Zeo Shanemar, and that's what means Vayar et Agalot, Asher Shalach Yosef, Velo Nemar Asher Shalach Paro. So Rashi is trying to explain the shift over here. He sees what Yosef has sent, and then he realizes that it must be from Yosef, because only Yosef knows this message. Now, what's the problem with this? That it's Paro who sends it. What else is the problem with this? What's two different things?
Here, Egla Arufa is a calf, and these are wagons.
Right. What does a wagon have to do with a calf? Meaning, he sees the Agala, and then he says, oh, we were learning Egla Arufa, and therefore this must be from Yosef. So this is also quite strange. If you look at source number 4, here is, it's not the only place that this midrash is mentioned, but this is one of them. Vayomer Yisrael Yosef, Shenishar bebayit etzlo, va'osek b'torah imo. That Yosef had stayed behind while all the brothers were out working. Yosef is in Kolo, learns with his father. All the brothers are working, he's there. What are they learning? Votosha hayu oskim b'inyan egla arufa. They happened to have been learning at that point Egla Arufa. And that's the way this midrash makes it sound. It just so happens to be they're learning Egla Arufa at that point. V'chein anu atidin ledrosh v'yar et agalot. And the midrash always says, and I will tell you another drasha about this later on when I get to the point of that he sees the agalot of Shishalach Yosef. Which means he sees this as being connected. This happens to be what they're learning, so he's telling you right now. It's a setup. I'm telling you this now because it's a setup, so when I come back to the Agalot later on, I can then be able to connect them. But of course, the problems are multiple, but one of the problems is Agalah and Egla. Look, they look very similar. You can spell them very similarly, but they're not exactly the same word. Why this should trigger this reaction. And the proof is even funnier because no one else would possibly know that this is what they were learning, but the idea to send it is Paro's and the idea is not necessarily Yaakov's. But again, let's go back to the pshat. What's the pshat over here? The pshat would seem to be that this is an expensive way of traveling and therefore only somebody who was in a position of great power, great wealth, would have been able to send over agalot like this to go. Again, it must have been many agalot were sent in order to be able to move over the entire camp of Yaakov and his extended family to bring them down to Egypt. So, therefore, when he sees the agalot And what was he told a moment before? He's told, Yosef is in Egypt. Yosef is a ruler over all of Egypt. And he says, I can't believe Yosef is alive. And then he turns around and sees, you know, all the stretched limousines that had come to take him. And he goes, you know what? Maybe this is in fact true. Because he started thinking, who else is going to start sending limousines for me? Who else is going to care? And where did all this come from? And at that point, he says, Yosef is alive. Let me go down. So I'm saying, that's what seems to me to be the simple pshat. Rashi didn't say that. Rashi instead wants to tell you that they were learning Egla Arufa, and that's the reason where he sees the Agala, he thinks of the Egla, and he thinks that Yosef sent it when it was Paro who sent it. Now, if you want to say, as you did want to say, that there's a difference between Pasuk Kaf Aleph, which is Alpi Paro, and Pasuk Kaf Zayin, which was Asher Shalach Yosef, and what he sees is Asher Shalach Yosef, That's nice, which is, yes, if you want to defend Rashi, you can defend Rashi that way, but why do you want to work so hard? Right? Again, you want a defense, you have a defense. You want to be lawyers, you can be lawyers, it's nice. But I'm saying, why did Rashi put himself in a position that needed defense where the whole thing sounds really quite strange? They'll start to think about the meaning. I got it. Good. It's easier for you anyway. If you start to think of the meaning of Egla Arufa, so then there is a very interesting subtext, which is obviously, I would say obviously, being communicated. Although, if you start to look through the commentaries, we do know that there are multiple books that are written as commentaries on Rashi. The subtext of the meaning of Egla Arufa is one that we need to pay attention to, and there are those who take this in absolutely two different approaches. Let's think for a second. What is an Egla Arufa? When do you bring an Egla Arufa? What's the purpose of an Egla Arufa? When? Right, source number 5. Ki imtza chalal ba'adama, shem Hashem lekecha noten lecha l'rishta, nofel b'sadeh lo nodea mi hikahu. When you find somebody, and it sounds very much, you find somebody who's murdered in the field and you don't know who killed them. V'yotzu zekeinecha v'shavtecha umadudu et ha'arim asher sivivot ha'chalal. You take out rope and you measure it to see which city is closest to where this body was found. And then presumably the city which is closest, it has responsibility to do this whole process of called Egla Arufa. It is found in the sources that this is not obviously only just some kind of a ritual which is done. This is also a process which is a moral process, which means one or person has to look inside and say, what kind of responsibility do I have? So therefore, presumably, the one who's closest to something that takes place, they're the ones who would have had moral responsibility to try to do something to prevent it, which means one has to think through and say, okay, here a tragedy took place, and obviously we respond too late to tragedies, and we respond after we can't do anything about it anymore. And over here it's saying, okay, let's think about this and figure out what happened and who really needs to take responsibility for this. As I said, this is very much, this measuring that takes place should absolutely be understood not just in terms of dry ritual, but should be understood as well in terms of an internal process that takes place. What's the matter, Charlotte?
Well, I came in a few minutes late, so I don't know if you already said it, but it's so obviously apropos to their situation.
Of course. I didn't say it yet. Go ahead. Okay. We're waiting for you.
Well, who takes responsibility for the missing Yosef and trying to decide who that is?
Correct. So this then becomes a fascinating message which is being sent. But what's the message? Okay, good. Now what's Yosef saying? Okay, let's start measuring. Who's supposed to take responsibility for this? Is he blaming, again, maybe we need a therapist here to help us, is he blaming his father for having sent him? Is that the question?
He didn't prevent this from happening. If you're saying like the people in the city should have prevented it, then in some sense his father should have prevented this happening by not sending him.
Correct. So that becomes a very, very interesting thought.
From a therapeutic point, you have to blame. All he has to do is raise the issue, and
Oh, you're good.
That's the issue. Depending on
who feel guilty is what we respond. But we'll need therapy by the time you finish.
The father sees the constancy in the message because he's already feeling guilty. He didn't see the power sense. He sees that Yosef then. He sees that he's holding. He knows what was willing to accept the message before because it was something that doesn't really repeat. But this message is willing. Parents see, how do you put it? Does it have to break their heart again every time?
I forgot how I put it. They give you enough hope just to break your heart all over again the next time. That's what it was. So this becomes a very interesting message then, because if we take the Egla Arufa, and we take it, again, not just in its technical sense, but in its more moral sense, and say, okay, start looking inside, saying who's responsible. I just want to read through a little bit more on the source. First of all, I find it very interesting in the psukim themselves, when it describes the Kohanim, who then are meaning the first part is the Chachamim do the measuring, and then you do the process of the Egla Rufa in Pasuk Dalet, Varidizaknei Irahi et Agla El Nachal Eitana Shelo Yaved Bo Velo Yizareva Arpu Sham et Agla Benachal. You take an Egla which has not been worked, and then you take off its head by this Nachal. V'nikshua Kohanim b'nei Levi Ki Vam Bachar Hashem Elokecha L'Sherto Ulevrech B'Shem Hashem. That's an unbelievable verse, because it says, who do you use? Kohanim b'nei Levi. Let's keep in mind that Levi himself was one of the people behind the whole sale of Yosef. He's the one right away, let's kill him. Which means this almost became a murder where Yosef's body would have been left in the middle of the desert, which is something we haven't brought up yet. That is something which is the way the story begins. But then it says that Levi are the one, meaning take the Kohanim, who are the sons of Levi, and then it just sort of throws in, but obviously it's not just throwing in as a side point, whose job is to serve God, but not just that, levarech b'shem Hashem. What is the bracha that a Kohen gives? What's the bracha that they make? You know the bracha the Kohen makes before he says that? No, none of you know the bracha, and you never did it. No, the bracha that a Kohen makes. The bracha that he makes before he gives the bracha to the people is that they've been chosen levarech et amo Yisrael ba'ahava. That means that their job is to spread love among the people. So their job is to spread love, and now the Kohen, who apparently did not fulfill the job properly because there was not love spread about the people, instead what do we have? We have the exact opposite case. We have a case of sin'ah, perhaps sin'at chinam, a lack of love, and that's that's an obvious focus to over here to the parsha of Egla Arufa, and then it continues to say Al Piyam Yeko Rivachol Naga, and they're the ones who are supposed to settle the disputes, which means something went terribly wrong in this case. We mentioned a moment before about measuring. So over here, you want to measure and say why was there a breakdown in society. What went wrong? So this pasuk is pointing an accusative finger and is saying the Kohen did not take enough responsibility in terms of spreading love. The Kohen did not take enough responsibility to settle the disputes, and therefore this tragedy took place. And by the way, everything I'm saying now would also have to do with the fact that the person who kills even by accident goes into Galut until the Kohen Gadol dies. What does the Kohen Gadol have to do with anything? So apparently the Kohen has everything to do with this, and when we start measuring, what we're saying is that leaders need to take responsibility. Leaders can't say, look, what terrible people I have out there. I'm a wonderful leader, but they're really, you know, my followers are terrible. No. Leadership must take responsibility, and that's part of the measuring that needs to take place over here. So, the suggestion of Egla Arufa, I guess collectively the first thing that, I don't know if it's the first thing that came to our minds, but the first thing that we articulated, is something which is actually quite negative. Our therapists were all very happy over here because we get to bring up the issues, we get to talk it out, we get to express our guilt, and so on, and these are all very positive things. Where would we be as a people without guilt? But that's not the way that most of the Mefarshim take it. Most of the first take it a very, very different way, a far more technical way, and a way which I don't find as interesting as this, or as impressive. What? It's not. Yeah, yeah. No, not at all. What they look at is something else. And maybe even before I get to the other commentaries, I will bring one example of a Gemara which does something which is very similar. It's a very famous Gemara. I've quoted it before. Ma'aseh shahayu shnehim shavim to Gemara in Yoma. The Gemara over here tells us how one of the things they did in the Beit HaMikdash is that they would draw lots to decide who would get to do a particular service, which means theoretically any Kohen who was on duty could do any of the things that needed to be done. The problem is, the Mishnah tells us that once upon a time it happened that two Kohanim were racing up to do a particular job, and one of them pushed the other one fell and broke his leg. The Braita, based on the Tosefta, in the Gemara then continues and says, oh, you think that's good? That's nothing, because once two Kohanim were running to do it, one gets there before the other, and the other guy was so upset that he got to serve God, he pulled out a knife and he stabbed the person, and he killed the other Kohen. Which is clearly a Gemara telling you, in case you ever wondered why we don't have a Beit HaMikdash anymore, we just simply don't deserve a Beit HaMikdash, because if people can get so focused on serving God by killing another human being, so then obviously something is terribly wrong. That's the story over here. Ma'aseh shehayu shneihem shavim v'ratzin v'olin bekevesh, tanu rabbanan, ma'aseh b'shnei kohanim shehayu shneihem shavim v'ratzin v'olin bekevesh, kodam echad mehem l'toch arba amot shel chaveiro, natal sakin v'takalo b'libo. He pulled, the English is not the whole thing. He pulled out a knife and stabbed in the heart. Amad Rabbi Tzadok amalata ulam. Rabbi Tzadok stands up and he says the following. Va'amar. Again, the guy's not dead yet even. Va'amar. Achinu Beit Yisrael, Shim'u. My brothers, the community of Israel, listen up. Harehu Omer, it says, Kim tzachelo ba'adama v'yatzu zekanecha v'shoftecha. It says that when you find a dead body, the elders should go out, the judges should go out. Anu almi lahavi egla arufa. They measure. So it says, by us over here in the Beit HaMikdash, whose responsibility is it to bring the egla arufa? Al ha'ir o ha'azarot. Is it on the city of Jerusalem? The Jerusalem municipality should pay the bill, or is it on the treasury of the temple? Who's going to pay the bill for the egla arufa that needs to be brought? Ga'a kol ha'am b'chiyah, and everybody started to cry. Now, what Rabbi Tzadok said is absurd. Why is it absurd?
First of all, it's not who said that. Second of all, they know who did it.
Right. And third of all, right. He's not dead. First of all, he's not dead yet. Right. First of all, he's not dead. Maybe you can kill him so that you can do the Egla Rufa, but even. Maybe that would be the next step. You know, oh, we get to do another korban. This is great. First of all, he's not dead yet. Secondly, the egla roof is only when you don't know who did it, and you have to start measuring, right? Thirdly, another thing you don't necessarily know, which the Gemara here tells us, is that there is a special law. It says b'kol sharech in any of your inhabitants, but not in Jerusalem. Jerusalem is excluded from the law of egla roof. But what he's saying over here, the Gemara asks this. So what's he talking about? He says, for a very simple reason. To get people to cry. Sometimes it's good to make people cry. Sometimes people should cry, which means anybody who's witnessing this, who's not crying yet, there's something terribly wrong. And maybe that's part of the story even. That the people are watching this and they need Rav Tzadok to get up and start talking and saying this in order to make them cry, because they're not crying watching this, because maybe they think it's quite normal to have Kohanim racing and pulling knives on one another because they want to serve God so profoundly. But what is interesting about this Gemara is that you have, you know, people with a whole moral basis completely confused, but what you do have is the use of Egla Arufa in order to ask questions of responsibility, which means, where did this come from? Where did this behavior come from? Is this something which is outside in Jerusalem? Is this something on the streets, the way that people are behaving out there? Or is this something which is being bred in the Azara itself? That's what he's asking. Where did this come from? This behavior is not acceptable. Let's measure it. Let's take a look and see where this came from, which means in this Gemara, I think you can see the moral aspect of Egla Arufa outside of the ritual aspect, because the ritual aspect doesn't exist over here. Only the moral questions exist.
But it is highlighted that it is referenced to Egla Arufa without the reference to crying.
Parashah in terms of Yosef's own weeping and crying. So, I mean, and clearly this was not in reference to this Yosef story, this Gemara that you just read us, but yet there is the...
Right, but the Midrash, who's connecting Egla Geruva to Yosef, I think part of what's going on in there, in the authors of the Midrash, is, oh, look how nice this fits into the Yosef story. I do see them as seeing this connection. Again, I can't possibly prove this, but it sounds like there is something there. Now, as I said, the later commentaries, they look for something which is far more technical and maybe less inspiring. Let's look at the Chizkuni in Source 7. Chizkuni quotes Rashi, and then he writes him, Toma Masi Manhuzeh, Ela aviv livahu kidmitagminan vayishlachehu me'imichevron va'alavyeh. Now, let me explain what he just now said. He said, no, the thing about the Egla Arufa creates a whole nother issue. And that is, that what do we learn from Egla Arufa? That when we have guests, we're supposed to accompany our guests. Was just to walk them to the door and past the door and walk. And by the way, this is a mitzvah. This is absolutely a mitzvah to walk your guests out. But not only that, if the guests are going on or on going to travel someplace, then you give them food to take with them, which means take responsibility for your guests. I mean, in a sense, see yourself as traveling with them and don't just part ways, say goodbye, and that was that. So, they see, again, others, let's start with the Chizkuni, but as I said, it's virtually a whole bunch of Rishonim, almost all the Balei HaTosfot who commented on this. They see the main issue over here as taking place like this. And we'll reconstruct what they understand. Yaakov says to Yosef, go see your brothers. Yaakov then, being a good Jew, being raised in the household of Avraham, as a kid, he sees Avraham, knows that what Avraham would do would certainly walk his guests, and we'll see where they get that from in a moment, would certainly walk his guests to the door and then some and give them food and take care of them. So over here, as Yaakov is sending Yosef away, he obviously must have accompanied him and walked him and be melaveh oto, goes with him. And when he's doing this, Yosef may be saying to him, Dad, you know, it's okay, I'll go, you go back. He goes, no, it's a mitzvah to be milaveh. And in that context, they claim that when he says, well, where do you know it's a mitzvah? And he then tells them, well, there's going to be such a thing in the Torah. Of course, this becomes very fanciful, and you have to then accept that, Yaakov had a CD-ROM with him, which had all of the Torah in it, and he had access to all the information, but they're not concerned by that part at all. But rather, he says, well, in the future, one day, there will be something called an Egla Arufa, and that's going to be brought when somebody doesn't take proper responsibility, and that happens when you don't accompany your guest, and you don't walk them, and you don't provide for them, and you don't take care of them, and you just leave them, and you forget about them. So now, that's the way they reconstruct the whole thing, and that's why they were discussing Egla Arufa, in order to describe what it means to properly accompany somebody. So now, what word did they get that from? They got it from the verse in Source 11, we'll jump there for a moment, which is also, it's interesting, what word is in that? I mean, it is how they're doing, but you see the word shalom. Shalom achecha, ve'et shalom hatzon, v'hashivenu dova v'yishlachehu me'emek chevron. Now, what does the word actually say in the Chumash? V'yishlachehu. What does v'yishlachehu mean? He sent him. The Targum, this is what he's referring to. The Targum on this verse says, not vayishlachehu, but that he accompanied him. He was milaveh oto. Now, why would the Targum change the word from vayishlachehu, which means to send him, and that's the connotation, he sent him, go. Why would it change it from he sent him to that he accompanied him, which really have very, very different connotations, right? So this is where he gets it from. But we're still not sure about why he said this. Let's look at the Chizkuni again now and read it through. Vim tomar masiman huze ela aviv livahu kidimitagrminan, as the Targum tells us, vayishlacheyum eimecharon va'alavei. Omer lo Yosef Aviv, Chazor b'cha, Omer lo b'ni, Gdola l'viya, She'atida parshat egla urfa, She'nosfa b'tora, K'dechtiv yadanu lo shafcha, lo shafchu, it should read, Et adam, v'chit, it's written shafcha, and it's pronounced shafchu, Et adam, v'chit ale adatcha, She'sanhedrin hargin, Ela lo patrininu b'lo mazon u'b'lo l'viya. That this teaches, when a person says, we did not spill this blood, what are they then saying? We did everything we were supposed to do. We were milaveh, we gave them food, we took care of them. So you can only say that you take no moral responsibility if you had no moral lacking. If, though, you did have lacking, then you can't say those words. So obviously, we're talking about people who normally do practice livia in a proper way, accompanying people in a proper way. Okay, and as I said, similar things could be found in others. Just before we go any further, if you look at the Kli Yakar, sorry, go back a second to number 8, where it's underlined right before the end of the first paragraph. This is the Datzakeinu Bale Tosa, and he writes, V'kasha l'shnei perishin l'faresh egalot l'shon egla. He goes, let's be honest, why in the world are we translating agalot, wagons, anything to do with an egla, with a calf? What does one thing have to do with the other? And by the way, let's keep in mind that in Jewish sources, very often a calf has negative connotations, right? When I say an egel, what's the first thing that comes to your mind? Which, incidentally, also has some kind of Yosef theme involved in that. Where do you see the Yosef theme with the egel? Rashi tells us. Rashi commenting on the verse, V'yatzah ha'egel hazeh. It's here someplace, right? Yeah, source 10. Ego masecha, kaven shahishlichuhu lakur, when they threw it into the core, that's, how do you say core? It's like an oven, kind of a furnace. When they threw it into the current furnace, bo machshafei erev rav, the witches of the, or the people of the erev rav, who knew incantations, shalui mami mitzrayim, who came after Egypt, so bikshafim, and they used magic. And they had something written in the name of God, something which Moshe wrote, Aleshor. Now, what's this Aleshor? Yosef is called Ashor. Okay, we're not going to get into that where. It's clear in Dvarim, in Moshe's bracha. It's less clear in Yaakov's bracha. But Yosef is called Ashor. What's Ashor? It's an eagle that grew up. And when Moshe wants to find Yosef's body, remember it says all the people went looking for the gold. And Moshe then goes looking for Yosef, which is very interesting, because then what happens to the gold? It gets turned into the eagle. Moshe goes looking for Yosef, but he can't find Yosef. So the Midrash tells us, this is what Rashi is referring to. The Midrash says that he then takes the name of God, writes it down on something, throws it into the Nile. And what does he write on God's name? And then he says, Aleh Shor. Shor, come up. Yosef, come up. And Yosef comes up from the bottom of the Nile. Why was Yosef in the Nile? Because he didn't want the Egyptians to turn him into a deity, and he asked that his body be taken away. He didn't have permission to take it to Israel, like Yaakov, but Yosef's body is hidden, the bottom of the Nile, and how does he get it out? Aleh Shor. Now, then they take this thing that says God's name in Aleh Shor, throw it into the furnace, and guess what happens? V'yatzah ha'egel hazeh. Because what does Aaron say? Aaron says, I didn't do anything. Right? We put the gold in the thing, and what happens? Yatzah ha'egel hazeh. It means, oh, it just happened by itself. So Rashi over here is trying to explain how it could possibly be that what Aaron is saying is not just, you know, trying to defend himself, but rather, yatzah ha'egel. So he gives us this wonderful midrash. But what's disturbing about this midrash? Somehow, we just now did something terrible to Yosef. We just now took the egel. Right? We just now took the egel and say somehow the egel is connected and goes all the way back to Yosef. That's very disturbing. So again, I just want to point out that Yaakov seeing Yosef and seeing the egel, and over here seeing the egel and understanding Yosef, and over here seeing that the egel is connected to Yosef, we have some negative thoughts about an egel and Yosef, and we need perhaps to go a little bit further to understand what's going on. The Kli Yakar tells us in source 9, he quotes Rashi and he writes, Uperusho rachok me'od. He says, this is very, very far from what any of us would call pshat. V'chidar kosho Rashi lo tziya mikro mipshuto lagamre? Is it really Rashi's role to completely take a verse, you know, and wrestle it out of its context and out of the pshat? Sharei ha-kotuv omer asher shalach Yosef l'seitoto. Va'od agalot lamadli dai begla achad agalot agalai. He says, I don't know what he's talking about. He then goes on to say, "Okay, no woman, Ishagam Rashi Yevin Agalot Kipshuto." He knew that it really is really Agalot. Of Mashi Nemar Sheshalach Yosef, Alon Nemar Sheshalach Paro, Yevin Rashi Bizeh Sheshalach Pirish Livia. That what does Shalach mean? So he's going back and says, "Ah, we know what Shalach really means. How do we know what Shalach means? Because Rashi knows very well what the Targum means. So when you go back to the beginning of the story, when Yaakov sends Yosef Shalchuhu Me'emek Chevron." There it means, the Targum says it really means Leviya, that he accompanied him. And over here, Asher Shalach Yosef, that Yosef must have accompanied it. He then continues to tell us, She Yosef asa Leviya lo ta nagalot, Asher Shalach, Shechei nema vishlach etecha v'yelchu, ve'in shiluach ze el Leviya. And there shiluach must mean that he accompanied it. V'Yosef laman din ha Leviya min Yaakov, Shekein ne'amar, lechu ve'el shalcha aleihem, v'chi achar she'elech yishalchu, u'ma haya hamikra chaser im haya ochel, im haya omer lecha aleihem, elo she'amar lilvato. So what he's saying, going a little quick now, what he's saying is that if you go back and look at the context when Yaakov sends Yosef, it's redundant to say, v'yishalchu me'em echaron, because he already said in the verse before that he sent him. So when he said that he sent him, why is it coming back and saying he sent him again? So he says, what must this really mean? Not that the first time he said to go, and what does it mean the second time? That he accompanied him, and that he's really going with him, and that's what it means that he sent him. But what all this is doing for us is it's taking us back to a verse that we really need to look at, because there's something which I think is very significant about this verse. And we need to pay attention. Source 11, let's read it again. Vayomer lo lech na re'e et shlom achecha v'et shlom atzon v'ashivenu devar v'ashlechehu me'emek chevron v'yavo shechema. What's the most disturbing word in that verse? Emek. Why is emek disturbing? Any of you want to go travel to Chevron today? Probably see some nice snow. Why would you see nice snow? Right, it's up on a mountain. So over here, when this says me'emek chevron, there's something the matter with this. Right, it's not emek. It's not me'emek chevron. Unless, what does it mean? Go back now. Again, pshat. The Targum, Onkelos wants to tell you pshat. What does pshat mean? What is the pshat over here? Where is chevron? Up on a mountain. How do you get to an emek? You walk. You travel, which means where does he send him from? Emek Chevron. That means where do they start from? They start from Chevron. And he accompanied him down the hill all the way till they get to the Emek. It's not Emek, you know, it's the Emek which is near Chevron. And what does therefore this tell you? What's pshat over here? That it accompanied him. Okay, so now you understand where the Targum is getting it from. The Targum is not just saying, okay, what does the word vayishlechehu mean? It's what does it mean vayishlechehu me'emek chevron? That's what the Targum is referring to. No, it's correct. So therefore, again, chevron is up on a mountain. Presumably Yaakov lives up on the mountain. Vayishlechehu me'emek chevron is after he already told him to go. That's where it's getting this whole thing of accompanying him. But look at the Targum Yonatan in source 12. Because he sees something much deeper in this verse. Vayishlechehu Vayomer lo lech na ra'e et shlom achech v'et shlom atzon v'yishivenu davar Vayishlechehu al etze amuka shedubar im Avraham b'chevron v'hu hayom hayat chilat galut mitzrayim v'yakom v'yavo Yosef l'shem. The Targum sees something far deeper in this, no pun intended, of this verse. What does it see? This is when Galut Mitzrayim begins. He goes, pay attention. Galut begins over here. Rashi phrases it slightly different. Me'emek Chevron, what does Rashi ask? V'lo Chevron Bahar. Shenema v'yilu b'negev v'yavo ad Chevron. They went up, right, from the Negev, and they climbed to Chevron. Ela me'etza amuka shalotot tzadik hakavor b'chevron. So Rashi understands, what's Emek Chevron? Deep, buried in the recesses of Chevron. What's that? The Marat HaMachpelah. And who's buried deep inside? Avraham. And what did God say to Avraham? You shall surely know that your descendants will be enslaved in a land which is not theirs. Which means Galut Mitzrayim begins now from Emek Chevron. And that's what Rashi is telling you the Pshat. Again, Rashi doesn't go the exact way as the Targum. The Targum says it means Emek Chevron. It's a mountain. It's the same question. If it's a mountain, why is it Emek? So, by the way, the Targum, you realize now, is a lot closer to Pshat than Rashi is. Because what the Targum is saying is that it must be that he accompanied from the mountain down into the valley. And what is Rashi telling you that this means? What's Emek Chevron? Something deep inside of Chevron. But what is that? That is God's decree that Am Yisrael will go down into Egypt and will become enslaved in Egypt. Now, the Gemara has something very interesting to tell us about the slavery in Egypt. Here is when it does begin. But when was it supposed to begin? So the Gemara in Source 14 writes, Amar Reb Chiya bar Abba, Amar Reb Yochanan, Ra'oi Haya Yaakov Avinu Lired L'Mitzrayim B'shal Shalot Shel Barzel. That how should have the exile begun? It should have happened with Yaakov Avinu himself, tied up in chains, being dragged down into Egypt as a slave. Right? That's how Galut Mitzrayim should have begun. Okay? Now that's a very, very strong image. It's also very humiliating. It's also much closer to what happens in the future when the Jews are dragged off into Galut. Which means if you realize that Galut Mitzrayim becomes foreshadowing for a future Galut, the future Galut's going to take place that way. This Galut, therefore, should also take place that way. And therefore, Yaakov Avinu is supposed to go down. That's it. Yaakov is supposed to go down. Which then leads us to a very interesting question. So what happened? The Gemara here continues and says, Elishes chuto goramalo dichtiv b'chevle adam amashchem ba'avotot ahava v'yelahem kimimei ol al lachehem va'at alav ochil. If we'll read the English, which will not help you much more. I drew them with the cords of a man with bands of love. I was to them as they that take off the yoke on their jaws. I laid meat before them. Which is saying that instead of being dragged down, tied up by chains, instead they got pulled down through rope of love, as it were. That they were being pulled down ever so gently, looking for food, being pulled down in a much more dignified fashion. So instead of Galut Mitzrayim starting in a humiliating fashion, it starts in a much more dignified fashion. It starts with Yaakov Avinu going down to Egypt in his first class stretch limousine, Egel or Agalot, and so on, with, of course, one serious problem with all this. And what's that? Yaakov goes down first class. How did Yosef go down to Egypt? In chains. So now you realize that what we're being told over here is that which took place to Yosef should have taken place to Yaakov, but God has compassion on Yaakov and spares Yaakov of this terrible indignity. And instead, what happens? Instead, Yosef goes down in chains. But Yaakov comes down looking for love. Why? He comes down being pulled by the son who he loves and he misses. So Yaakov goes down, instead of being pulled down, as it were, in chains, he goes down looking for his son and expressing love. And when he sees him, he says Shema, which expresses our love to God, V'atah Hashem Elokecha, and that's why he says Shema, the moment that Yaakov's general feeling is completely full of love, and that's what brings him down to Egypt. Let's take a look at Source 18, the Akedat Yitzchak. No, first look at 17. Medrash Tehillim, it tells us the same thing as the Gemara. Amar Rabbi Yehuda bar Nachum, Hashem Rabbi Shimon Lakish, where Uriah Yaakov led the Mitzrayim Bishal Shalot Shel Barzel of Klarin. He should have gone that way. God changed it at the top of the next page. Amar of Pinchas HaKohen bar Chama, Mashal, and this has to catch our attention. Mashal lepara echad, she wrote Sinlim Shochoto lemukulin shela, loitanim shechet ma'asu, mashchu bina tchila. What's a bina of a para? An egel. So God wants to bring Yaakov down, so it's a mashal that they take the egel down first, and this takes us right back, even using this other whole approach, it takes us right back to the idea of the egel, v'hayteretza acharav, and then the cow will go happily afterwards to find its egel. Source 18, Akedah Yitzchak. V'homa shemar v'yehuda, bal ha-simanim and iskirim, oyeh Yaakov v'yered mitzrayim b'shal shalot shel barzel, כי השם יתברך באהבתו אותם, לא מנע מהם הירידה לשם באחד מאופני השכחה, אבל העבה את החבלים, he made them thicker, וכפל אותם, and doubled them, עד שעשה אותם אבותות, till he made them like really, you know, thick rope, וסיבות חזקות לרדתם שם, כדי להמשיכם גם כן בחבלי אדם, ובאותות אהבת עבודת הקהל יתברך, אל טוב הצלחה אמיתית הצפונה לעבדיו ובני בריתו, and so on, which means Yaakov going down to Egypt, what he's describing is not going down because he's dragged against his will. He goes by his will, but again, his will over here, we have to now ask, what should have the will been? His will is to find Yosef, and therefore he's pulled down by love. The Bat Ayin in source 19, Lefiza Nefereshe Bavada Ritzon Yerav Yaaseh, God fulfills the will of those who fear Him. VeYaakov Yadasha Hu Ra'uy LeRed LeMitzrayim, and Yaakov certainly knew that he was the one who should go down to Egypt. Bishal Shelot Shel Barzel, being all pulled by chains. Bivchinat Galut Al Pi Sibah Yadua LaHabarei Baruch Hu. Ulachin Bikesh Yaakov Lishav Bishalva. We'll come back to that in a moment. Yaakov requested to live in tranquility. Hainu Pirushit Palel Meashem Shiashav Bishalva. He prayed to God, let him live in tranquility. Vashem Barov Rachamav Oseritzon Yirayav. And God, with all of his compassion, does the will of those who fear him. Vilgilgel Hadavar Shitakfotzalav Rogzoshil Yosef Kadesh Yered Mitzrayim Bechavod. And he changed the whole thing around, so that instead of Yaakov going down, Yosef goes down. Now, what was he just now quoting? He was quoting a Rashi, which itself, Rashi quotes a Midrash, which is in the beginning of Parshat Vayeshev. The first pasuk in Vayeshev is, Vayeshev Yaakov be'eretz Megoriv be'eretz Kanan. Eila toldot Yaakov, Yosef ben Shavasrei Shana, which leads us to this connection between Yaakov and Yosef. Rashi commenting not on the words Vayeshev Yaakov, Rashi comment on the words of the next pasuk, Eila toldot Yaakov Yosef. Eila toldot Yaakov, source 20. Eila shel toldot Yaakov, Eila yeshuveihem v'gilgulehem ad shabo l'klal yeshuv. Siba rishona Yosef ben Sheva Asrei v'chulei, al yedei zeh nitgalgalu v'yerdu l'mitzrayim. Which means, he says, pay attention to what Parshat Vayeshev is really about, because what's it about? It's about the story of how the Galut begins. The story of how Eila toldot Yaakov Yosef, and the story of Yosef is ending up in Egypt, but Yosef's going in Egypt is in his role as son and continuation of Yaakov. Which means Yaakov is the one who should really be going down, Yosef goes down. Towards the end of that Rashi, in source 20, Rashi writes, where it's underlined, Va'od nidrash bo vayeshev, and furthermore, there's another interpretation. What does it mean, vayeshev, that Yaakov settled? Again, you pay attention. Vayeshev Yaakov settled, be'eretz migurei aviv. His father and grandfather, migurei, from the word gar, from the word ger, from the word stranger, strangeness. Vayeshev is settling. Vayeshev Yaakov, be'eretz migurei aviv. Yaakov settles. Rashi writes, "Va'od nidrash bo vayeshev bikesh Yaakov leshev b'shalva." What did Yaakov want? Enough already. God, come on, do you feel bad for Yaakov? He hasn't had an easy life. His brother wants to kill him. Father-in-law, more wives than he knows what to do with. And, I mean, look at his life till this point. He finally comes back to Israel. What does he want? He wants a little peace and quiet. What is Yaakov supposed to do next? What is Yaakov supposed to do next? Go to Egypt and start Galut Mitzrayim. It's time to start Galut Mitzrayim. You got to go down. Get the chains on you and drag him down to Egypt because Galut has to begin. Oh, you want to settle? You want to take it easy? You don't want to live up to your responsibility, live up to the destiny, live up to what God promised to Avram? There's a whole promise going on. And the promise includes, go down now, and leave Ruchush Gadol, but you have to go down. What does Yaakov want? Yaakov prays. No, I can't do this. I just need to take it easy a little bit. I can't go down now to Egypt. Okay. Bikesh Yaakov l'shev b'shalva kafatzalav rugzo she Yosef. So then what happens instead? Then the whole Yosef story comes instead. Tzadikim avakshim l'shev b'shalva makodesh baruch hu l'adayin l'tzadikim ha'shem mutukan lem l'olam haba. It's not enough what you have waiting for you in the world to come. Elishem avakshim l'shev b'shalva b'lozeh. You want to take it easy over here also? You have a responsibility. But Yaakov, you don't want to do it. And that's what we saw till now. Yaakov is supposed to go down in chains of Barzel, but instead it goes down through Rogzosh Yosef, through the anger of Yosef. Now, when I was thinking about this idea of chains of Barzel, my daughter, who's 7 years old, said something to me a couple of weeks ago which got me thinking. I said something about Barzel, somehow Barzel came in the conversation, you don't remember how, do you? Barzel, come on. And she says, Barzel, oh, that's Bilha, Rachel, Leah, and Zilpah. That's Barzel. I said, how do you know that? So she said, my teacher told me. So I don't know where her teacher knew it from, but I went searching all over, and the only one who I found saying this is the Arizal. The Arizal, we can see in source 16, Eretz asher avneha barzel, a land whose stones are barzel. You need to know that kol evan heim b'nekeva, stones are generally in the feminine. Yes? I guess that's why women like stones, precious jewels, and so on. It's in the feminine. V'hinei ha'nekevot ha'ela heim arbe neshei Yaakov, Bilha, Rachel, Zilpah, Leah, sherosh ha'tevot shelahem barzel, kasher b'yarnu. So this is barzel, which then, to me, was very interesting, because if the Arizal, when he says this, and I looked around, I didn't find him saying it in our context of Yaakov being dragged down by Barzel. But if Yaakov, at that point, as soon as he comes back to Israel, says, "My job is not to go to Israel. My job is to start the Galut now," and he would have come with Barzel, you know, enwrapped by Barzel, which means his family united with Bilha, Rachel, Leah, and Zilpah, or whatever the order is, what?
With Rachel,
but all together, united, and then going to Galut united, it would have been a completely different type of Galut, which means instead of doing it as a family, instead we have Rogzosh el Yosef, and we have, which means instead of going down in the way of Ahava, which means in a way which is complete, with Barzel, instead, he ends up going in a completely different way, and that is through the Rogzoli of Yosef, and then him being brought down through the Ahava of Yosef. But that's a very, very different type of scenario of a Galut.
Although you used that interpretation for Barzel, you could say that it was chains of love rather than chains of... In other words, Barzel then could have meant chains of love, which is what this other Midrash said.
Correct. I understand. So let's think a little bit about what Galut. Correct, but we still need to understand what the purpose of Galut is. It's interesting that sometimes we speak about the Egyptian experience. It's described in the Navi as Kor HaBarzel. What's a Kor? Again, a Kor HaBarzel. Can you call? You could call it a melting pot, and that's important. But it's a place where the Jews are supposed to work on their midot, which means how many times in the Torah does it say, "Don't do this and don't do this because you were slaves in Egypt. You should know better. You were the disenfranchised. You were the ones who would take advantage of. You were slaves." How many times does it say in the Torah? 36 times. 36 times it says, "You know what it was like, and therefore you should behave differently," which means the Egyptian experience becomes the moral imperative that creates Jewish values and creates Jewish behavior. That's why we have to run down to Egypt in order to go through that experience to become purified. That's what a core does. To be purified of anything which is impure within us, and then we can stand by Har Sinai, and then we can accept the Torah, and then everything will make sense. I'm the Lord God who took you out of Egypt. Now everything will make sense, because now we know what it's like to be disenfranchised. We need to go down in order to do that. But there's another, and the Megaleim will quote in 21, you see, he touches the Chini Roidli Red Lehotziotam Mikor Har Barzel Shoyim Mitzrayim Kor Shel Barzel, which is very interesting. Yaakov needs to go down in chains of Barzel to get to the core of Barzel. And then he continues, and he goes right into this idea of the Kofatzis of Rogzo Shel Yosef. The anger of the whole...
No, it's
not Yosef saying it. Okay. Point accepted. We're not talking about Yosef today. The therapist will all gather together afterwards and they'll discuss Yosef. Okay. And then he goes and he brings the midrash about, he calls it Ben Parat Yosef, Ben Parat Leayin. Parah, he connects with cow, and therefore says that's how the Jews end up in Egypt, because the cow goes and follows the eagle, and that's how the... That's how it begins. In source 22, and again, I could have found you dozens of different sources that said this, or... communicate the same type of idea. What's the purpose of going down to Egypt? So I just said what the purpose is. It's the core of Barzel. But over here, we're told, Pri Ha'aretz, Hinei ha-mashal hu hora'at inyan yiridat Yaakov v'banav l'mitzrayim, b'chdei lahalot nitzotzot ha-kdoshot m'mitzrayim, ki yedu al ha-pasuk v'yinatzlu et mitzrayim, ki targumo v'rokinu. Which means the purpose of going down to Egypt was not just to purify themselves, but you called the core before the melting pot. It's to bring out the other holy neshamot which may be there. Which means you go into Galut because there are many holy neshamot. We need to bring those holy neshamot, which is a broader theme in terms of Jewish history, that we should be a society that creates an example that so impresses the world that everyone wants to accept God, accept the Torah, and live a proper life. When we don't do that properly, then we need to. Then those neshamot still need to be brought in, then we need to go into Galut, because we didn't create a proper society. We need to go into Galut to find those neshamot. Over here he's saying that we need to go to Egypt to find those neshamot, to bring the neshamot out. Now this becomes very interesting, because that didn't seem to work out all that well either. When we brought those neshamot out, what happened? We ended up with the Erev Rav. And what happened with the Erev Rav? The Erev Rav ended up making an egel, and then we get all kinds of trouble again. If we'll go back to the Arizal for a second, still commenting on the word Parat, Ben Parat Yosef, source 23 in Sefer Halikutim, Amar Beis Pa'amim, Shnei Pa'amim Parat, Echad Yosef, V'chad Rabbi Akiva. Hold it, where did we just get Rabbi Akiva from? Said, well, who's Rabbi Akiva? Rabbi Akiva Ben? Akiva Ben Yosef. His father's name is Yosef. Akiva Ben Yosef. The Arizal here sees Rabbi Akiva Ben Yosef, Ben Parat Yosef. He then says, "V'romaz al mitato." It's somehow foreshadowing his death. V'mru v'rabu shi'sarku et bisaro b'mesrakot shel barzel. That how is Rabbi Akiva going to be killed eventually by being skinned by barzel? And again, that Gemara that he's quoting now does use the word barzel. What he seems to be suggesting over here is something which, if we put the things together, I think is interesting. First of all, Rabbi Akiva, we all know, comes from a family of Gerim. Right? It's not clear if he was a Ger, his father was a Ger, but he comes from a family of Gerim. Which means you talk about the Nitzitzot HaKadoshot, these holy sparks, these holy souls that need to be brought back in. What better example do you have of Rabbi Akiva? So therefore, the purpose of going down to the core, going down to Egypt, is in order to bring these souls out. Yaakov Avinu apparently doesn't, and this is what we're learning here, doesn't want to go down. Fine, one way or another, you're going to go down. You don't want to go down the proper way of doing it now, with Barzel, with chains of Barzel, which may have a connotation of it, of a family which is united, going down with the whole family as one, fine. Break off Yosef, and Yosef goes. Yosef becomes the continuation. Yosef will end up being dragged down into Egypt. But the delay over here is going to cause a delay of those holy neshamot are also going deeper and deeper into the corruption of Egypt, which means it's going to be that much harder afterwards of taking those neshamot out. Right? Because there is this delay eventually. Yosef is in Egypt, and Yosef apparently is supposed to start this whole process, which is not all that easy when you're only one person. And somehow we hear now of this negative connotation of Yosef and of this Erev Rav, which maybe it is Yosef's responsibility to start spreading a word of morality and start teaching ethics and start trying to raise these holy neshamot, which means we raise them enough to take them out with us, but we don't raise them enough in order to do exactly what it is that they need to do. But when we go further enough down the line, where do we find that the Barzel is used in a way of somebody who completely accepts upon himself his role? Which means, by Yaakov Avinu, we're hearing the Gemara saying, we're seeing some of these sources telling us that he doesn't, listen, he's worked hard enough as it is, he doesn't want to go to that next step. So you hopefully realize that the name Yaakov and Akiva is the same name. Right? It is the same name. And you realize that Yaakov Avinu, and they both have Rachel, and they both have problems with their father-in-law, and there's many connections between them. And they both say Shema, right, before they die. And Yaakov Avinu is supposed to go down with the Barzel and Rabbi Akiva and accept it ba'ahava. And instead what happens is that we have Rabbi Akiva, who's being killed with the Barzel, who accepts it completely with Ahava. Yaakov then gets a message of the Egla Arufa, which is about a lack of shalom, which is in the world, a lack of the Kohanim, of giving a message of shalom, a lack of there being Ahava in the world, because that's the bracha that the Kohen says, and that lack of Ahava, that not going far enough, apparently is what creates this problem of when they do leave Egypt, things are a little bit too bad, the situation is a little bit too dire, and the galut does not do what it needs to do. I will leave you, though, with one more thought about what the remez is that Yaakov sent, and this is found in source 24 in the Sifte Kohen, which is one of the commentaries on Rashi. He says at first, Pshat, Yosef sent him there because he didn't want him to go riding on an animal. It's better to be in an agala. He then brings in this whole issue of Egyptians possibly worshipping egels or calves, and therefore it would have been sensitive. And by the way, even people suggest that maybe the wagons they had were being pulled by an egel, and maybe the both things are together. But then he ends up and he says, V'remez lahem, but he actually was giving them a hint of something very, very different. It means Yaakov wasn't ready to go down to Galut, because Galut is long and it's hard and it's difficult, and he actually gave him a completely different remez, and then he writes at the end, V'remez lahem, sheba agala uvizman koriv yigalei makadosh baruch hu. Don't be so scared about going down, because the word in Aramaic, ba'agala uvizman kariv, it means it's going to happen very, very quickly. And even if you're going to start the galut now, don't worry, because God will bring the geula before you actually know what happened. Bezrat Hashem, ba'agala uvizman kariv, will experience the geula as well. So that's what I'm saying, is that the whole thing from the beginning is the strangest thing, because it's Paru's idea and not Yosef's idea. So I'm saying that Rashi is going all into this. Apparently, Rashi is trying to look at something which is a little bit deeper than we see from the text. I would suggest taking that Rashi and going back to the Rashi by Emek Chevron, and going back to the Rashi referring to Vayeshev, which is really where the whole thing should begin, and it doesn't begin there. Which means now you would think that the Galut Mitzrayim begins this week. You read the Chumash, Galut Mitzrayim begins now because Yaakov is going down. So he says, no, it's not really beginning now. The whole thing, you have to go back a little bit. Galut Mitzrayim begins when Yosef goes down, but that's not the way it was supposed to be. Yaakov was supposed to go down, and that would have been a completely different experience.